WHR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Have a great evening.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Yes, it is. News from the Boo time, when we speak about topics of interest here in the station and the greater KBOO listening community. We are joined tonight in Studio 2 with Selena Chow, who is KBOO's official archivist, which sort of implies that we have unofficial archivists, which I don't know is the case, but she is the official one. Her role as an archivist is part of KBOO's Community Radio's 50th anniversary on the air, where we have all kinds of big plans underway involving lots of stuff going on currently and with our prior recordings. So, Selena, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So we've had you on a couple times before, but for anyone who hasn't caught it, let's just backtrack a little bit and talk about what is archiving.
Sure. So I'm here at KBOO until the end of May as part of a program called the National Digital Stewardship Residency. And it's a specific kind of archiving. And mostly what I'm doing here is setting up workflows and processes to help KBOO preserve their digital audio files. Within the larger understanding of their archival holdings.
So what's in the KBOO archive? What kind of materials are we talking about, and what kind of shape are they in?
It's a lot of stuff. So when I got here, I reviewed all the information that has been collected and documented by previous volunteers and staff. There's an Excel sheet. It has 7,500 rows of things. And so I had to look at this information and say, what are these things? Most of the time, they are individual items, like maybe an audio episode. When I'm talking about these things, I'm really talking about the analog audio physical formats of news and public affairs programming. So KBOO has a lot of different things. We're focusing on news and public affairs because KBOO has rights to provide and share them more than just broadcasting once on the air. The physical formats are 10 7 5-inch open reels, cassette tapes, mini discs, digital audio tapes, CDs. What else would you like to know?
Well, is this an activity that's common to other media organizations like KBOO, or is this something that you've worked on in the past with other groups?
Yeah, so it is common. I mean, whenever an organization thinks more closely about what it wants to save and preserve for a long period of time, not just for its own health as an organization, but to share with others for research and education, then they think about archiving as a field and typically will hire an archivist. With the audiovisual materials, there are specific archivists that have skills specifically with these formats. So my residency, I'm one of seven people in different public broadcasting organizations. But other kinds of people who work with audiovisual materials are, you know, commercial news people, corporations, right, like Disney, you know, a lot of video content there. In my past work experience, I also worked at the New York Public Library, the Jerome Robbins Dance Division, and we have video recordings to document dance as performance art for research. So people go into the reading room, they request items from the catalog, maybe they need to study a 1930s version of Swan Lake, One Pas de Deux, compared to 1980s, or a new one coming out. Maybe somebody wants to just refresh their memory of the progress of a piece in order to like write a review, you know, maybe write a paper, things like that.
Is there a certain amount of discretion involved, or is there some material that you just decide, either as an archivist or as a representative of the organization, to just not save?
Yes. So archives are different than libraries. They're both educational, in my opinion, educational repositories of content. Archives have unique things that are not published. You know, they're rare, they're manuscript, maybe they're unpublished. Every archive follows the collection policy of their parent organization. So KBOO is not going to just collect all Pacifica Radio archives. We have some in our collection. It's not a priority because we don't own the rights to that. Different archives will decide, okay, we're going to keep final products, raw footage, all the works in progress, all these like edit one, edit two, we're not going to save. So it really is a collaboration between, you know, an archivist asking the organization questions and figuring out what it can handle, what it should specialize in, and what are other archives not collecting. Because there are many archives out there, everyone with a unique focus. There's archives of buttons. There's archives of candy wrappers, I think I heard this one earlier this day. Huh. Yeah.
So, Selena, clearly this isn't your first rodeo when it comes to large amounts of material that need to be archived. And I'm curious how KBOO stacks up. Do we have our work cut out for us? Are we somewhat organized?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I think that I'm really hoping to engage a lot of the listeners out here and the volunteers around to learn more about their stuff. And I come with the schooling from my training, the training for my schooling, I don't know. But basically, there's some best practices and guidelines in the field, but it really has to meet where KBOO is. And so here, I think it's more of a community archiving model, and everybody has a collective knowledge of content. Whatever programmers and hosts learn here of how to best document the information for their programs, they can probably take with them at home, you know, with their home archiving, how to best represent the information they have in their collections.
Have you run across anything so far that struck you personally as really, really interesting or just plain weird?
I sometimes tweet things. Right now, so I'm not personally like looking at things physically one-on-one in the back room. There's a lot, right? 7,500 line items of things. But I do have two great library science students who've been working with me, and I encourage them to take pictures and discuss these things as well. But there's this one set of E.E. Cummings, six non-lectures, and it was somebody who made a dub. And on the case, he wrote some notes that said, preserve forever or longer. And then the second reel contains some naughty words, schedule with due discretion. So I thought that was very interesting how some people, you know, there's a lot of memory and value and personal connection with media. And I like seeing that when I see these handwritten notes to people in the future. Do not, you remove this whatsoever. Preserve this forever or longer. Eternally.
Well, especially because, yeah, back in our reel-to-reel days, the physical media was very valuable and often reused because we couldn't afford to buy new fresh stuff all the time. So if someone took the time to actually call it out and say, no, preserve this reel, yeah, maybe there's something really interesting on there.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot too, and my colleagues have as well, where the reused boxes pose a challenge to us because we don't know which. Yeah. I mean, we can kind of guess. And then also I'm hoping to get more people involved in the guessing game, the fun of the mystery, figuring out what the content really is based on what the case is.
So what's the metaphor you would use? Is it more like looking for a hidden treasure, or is it like cleaning a garage?
Well, archivists mainly perform the organizational work so that we ensure materials can be accessible, so that researchers and other people using the archives can make these really fun discoveries. Archivists usually work in grant-funded projects, so we're not really encouraged to take the time to just look and enjoy while we're on the clock, right? But we do a bit of it, and it's also, in this day and age, important for outreach to keep people interested and engaged with what you're doing. But yes, archivists make discoveries in their own collections. I have to say that archives also hold items that they cannot share. So sometimes you're like, oh, this is so amazing, but nobody can ever know about this because of some copyright issues. There are things called orphan works where we know that items have rights holders, but we cannot get in touch with them. So we can't, you know, in good practice, share them in any way. It's very frustrating. So it is more like organizing your garage in a very specific way. So we practice our craft according to national guidelines. So it's like if you organized your garage, wrote a description, and then your description could be searched alongside many other garage content descriptions. I've been sharing example of this. It's archivegrid.org, which many people don't know of, and it's fun to just search and see what nationwide archive holdings are.
Ultimately, will the media in all of its various formats be digitized and accessible through, you know, either electronically via remote connection or here at the station?
I do not know if all of it, meaning all of what I see on this Excel sheet, will be digitized, because just from spot checking, there are some duplicates of content. So obviously, like, you know, something on OpenReel is also dubbed on a cassette, also on mini disc. So that all has to be, you know, put into its organized way so that we don't spend money that we don't need to spend. You know, we shouldn't be digitizing everything. But yeah, eventually, whatever is digitized, it's for sharing. So that's how we're prioritizing what, you know, finding out what we know about the content, and then sharing it for widest accessibility.
So how does all that tie into your larger vision for these archives?
I think KBOO is a great organization. I think there's a lot of interest in the material. I think down the road, the hosts and programmers will be invested in, more knowledgeable about the metadata. When I look at dates, it's not just a date. It's important to know if it's a created date or a broadcast date. So if you're helping a patron, like, oh, this program, I know it, you know, aired in this year, this time. So matching specific information is important. Also, documenting all contributor names and their roles. So right now, this is very incomplete. So I was looking, using this tool, on how often certain names come up. And right now, the most common names that come up are like Noam Chomsky, Michael Parenti, Helen Caldicott. And this is not at all representative of KBOO content. You know, and it's only because there hasn't been enough time and focus to put in KBOO names. Who is the host? Who is the guest? So down the road, I think people will be more conscious of these things because, you know, they'll know that people are looking for it. You know, especially you think about now, you're looking for something from our analog archives. We don't necessarily have all the information right now. So hopefully that drives people to document what they're doing now more in detail to help people down the road. There's also fun things that can be done besides just sharing the audio content. There's voice-to-text software that transcribes audio. And hopefully in a few years, the cost can come down so that it can be utilized by KBOO. Can you understand how something like this automated can go through a lot of documents and audio and create searchable text, you know, instead of somebody listening and maybe only searching index keywords? I know different people with audio content have remix platforms, you know, putting one thing into a player and you like put, and you know, we do this in a studio, right? We have the software for that, but for a wider public to know and play around with KBOO content without being in a studio, whatever is shared online, you know, we have like a Creative Commons reuse share alike kind of policy, and people can create new things with the archive materials.
So looking forward, once you've established a structure for cataloging the material that already exists and a system to record the metadata and make it searchable, then how does it work going forward for material that's being generated? Does it automatically feed into that system, or is it kind of, is it the kind of thing where every 5 or 10 years an archivist needs to come back in and say, all right, let's take a look at everything that we've generated since the last time you did this and put it all in a logical and systematic fashion into this organizational structure that you set up?
No, it definitely should be automated, and there's ways to do that. So our website is actually very well structured, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It has a lot more places for information. And in library and archives, we do what we call metadata mapping. So it's like, oh, this title name here matches with this title name over here. You kind of mesh them up, and so you can connect information either through an integrated search. You can use APIs, application program interfaces. But because of how little time and funds nonprofits have, it almost always has to be automated. There's no question about it.
So you've mentioned better metadata and title matching. I'm curious, are there any other requests you would make to current people who are volunteering at CABU and working here right now on behalf of an archivist that might show up two more decades from now?
Well, I hate to be so detailed, and maybe it's a small point, but I did see like the date convention. I always like year, month, day, because down the line, once it goes into a big pot of files, if you just have month and day and like a person's last name, that really doesn't match up to a program, an episode, or a year. So that's pretty important information. And just to think about what they want to find in their own content, you know? Maybe it's like, oh, maybe your grandson, your granddaughter, you know, a colleague across seas wants to find this information. What would they search for? What is important? What kind of topics?
Okay, CABU volunteers, take note.
Well, Salinas, thank you so much for joining us again. I'm personally, and I hope the listeners too, I'm super, super interested in this project, and I can't wait to see it come to fruition so that we can really get in and start digging through the old material. So please come in again as stuff develops so that we can talk more about what you found over the next few months.
Yeah, can I share how people can get in touch with me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't really share this, but I'm still learning about CABU and want to know how people utilize the archives, what they're interested in. So my email is selina@cabu.org, and Twitter, it's /selina_SJSU. I have a template of a website that is images of audio casings of Mr.